Shalom, everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleisher Show, broadcasting live from Judea to the world. You're a part of it wherever you are. That's right, you are part of the story of Judea. If it's in your heart, and if it's in your mind, and if it's in your life, and Jerusalem is calling. I think that's the title of an old book. Jerusalem is calling, and it is calling because it's Hanukkah time. And you know, Hanukkah is about lighting those candles in your home with your family. But in the times of the Third Commonwealth, the times that we live in, then it is also a time where Jerusalem's light shines to the world. And that is how you're a part of it. When you are lighting today's, this next week's Hanukkah candles, I want you to also light as a reflection of the light that's coming from Jerusalem. I want you to not only be that spread out diaspora and lovers of Israel light where every home is your special little place. I want you to be like, no. It's not that I am a little candle and we're all a lot of candles in this world. It's more like I'm a mirror. I am refracting that light that's being the big light that's coming out of Yerushalayim. In order to refract that light from Jerusalem, I introduce to you the one and only Malka Fleisher.
Yes,
Malka, shalom.
Refraction occurring.
That's right. That's right. Malka, yes. Shalom and welcome to you.
Hi.
And thank you so much for joining us, Malka.
Yes, thank you. Happy pre-Hanukkah.
Yes, I'm quite excited about it. I love Hanukkah.
Yes.
You know, I really love Hanukkah a lot. And the real, in my opinion, the real love of Hanukkah doesn't come just from the candles and the latkes and the stuff around it. A real love of Hanukkah is the study of the story of Hanukkah, because it is an incredible story. And it's so true, Malka. It's just true.
It's what just do you mean?
These, you know, about in the mid second century BCE, i.e. about 2,200 years ago, the state of affairs was that Israel was caught between two powers, the Seleucid Empire in Syria and the Ptolemy power in Egypt. And there were other powers that I don't even know a lot about, Carthaginians and other powers and Parthians, all these other powers that are fighting each other. These are important because these battles with these other powers were important because Antiochus the Fourth, who was the bad Antiochus, right? There was a lot of bad ones, but he was the bad one of Hanukkah. He was also fighting with other battles, and that's why Judah Maccabee understood that this was the time to attack. So these are important little sub-stories. But basically, you know, Antiochus the Fourth, instead of being like the Alexandrian model of like, we'll just rule and people can have their, you know, their ways and their religion, like cracked down on Judaism and became anti-Jewish and wanted to erase the Jewish, they call it xenophobia. You know, so, there's a certain truth that the Jewish way is insular. It's in its own thing. Let's call it unique or its own. Any case, he wanted to crack down on Judaism. And the problem was is that there was a lot of, and this is a big part of the story, there's a lot of Hellenists. The country had become right. Hellenized. They were called, you know, Sadducees or whatever they were called. They were called different things. But bottom line is that they were like pro-Greco, later Roman. You know, they were on that scale of thinking. And here came these guys, this family, who could have thrown their hands up and been like, whatever, you know what I mean? We'll just keep our Judaism to ourselves. But they were like, no, we have a national Judaism. And we have to push back on these Greeks. And we have to push back on these, on the Jews who have become pro-Greek in their thinking. And they fought a battle. And they were successful in both a military campaign, which was an asymmetrical guerrilla warfare. Stuff that's basically studied as classics of guerrilla warfare of the ancient world. Of the classical world and the world of antiquity, whatever, and you know, they were able to overcome superior forces through a knowledge of geography, of the landscape, and of valor and of techniques, and they also instilled back a sense of Judaism and a love of Judaism and
they
a
were
love
Judaizers.
Of, yeah. By the way, I'm thinking about changing the name of Judaism.
Okay.
Yes, yes.
That's going to be an uphill battle. Go ahead.
Judaism. I've said this before in the past, but I think I called it Judaism, but I'm saying Judaism. Judaism is like Judaism
with an Israel tweak.
Right, with an Israel center. It's like when you're in the diaspora and I don't mean people in the diaspora, I mean the period of diaspora, then it's Judaism. You know, keep it that little light in your house. But now we're Judaism. That's where we're at. Hmm. What do you think?
I mean, I like the thinking that has to occur as you present it.
Right. So anyway, my point about Hanukkah is that it is a real miracle, but like it's a miracle of like real, you know, real victory. If you've ever watched a sports game and seen people come back from, you know, from behind, as they say, you
underdogs.
Know, underdogs. It's just, it's an incredible victory, an incredible, and the, there was a military and cultural component to this victory. And we celebrate that to this very day. We celebrate that victory over Syrian Greek military,
right,
and Jewish
revival.
Revival, right.
It's very interesting. As you're talking, it makes me think about Twitter. It makes me think about previous holidays, Hanukkah holidays, in which you see different kinds of Jews talk about what Hanukkah means to them. Twitter happens to be a place where like that seems to go down a lot. And there are so many like leftist Jews, or as we kind of pejoratively call them, as a Jew, right? These like as a Jews. You know, who like as a Jew, they'll say something bad happens against the Jews. They'll be like, well, as a Jew, I disagree. And right. Really, the Jews deserve this or that.
I actually call it a little bit differently. I call it hashtag my Judaism.
My Judaism.
As in not Judaism.
Right, but my personal,
rendition of Judaism.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, so you'll see a lot of leftist Jews talk about Hanukkah. Now, to me, Hanukkah is one of the most ironic holidays for a leftist Jew to celebrate. And while I appreciate
Wait, what do you mean by leftist? That's a very...
I don't mean liberal, rights-loving people. I mean people who think that the Torah is threatening, people who think that the Jews are thieves and occupiers, people who think that...
Let's use the term progressive, then.
What's progress about that?
That's true. It's a bad term in that sense.
So why not leftist?
Because leftist can mean a lot of stuff.
What could it mean?
Because it could mean like environmentalism, and it could mean, you know, taking care of the poor and all kinds of other. I just think it's too broad of a sweep. It's too big. But we know what we're talking about.
Okay, anti-Zionist, anti-Torah Jews? That doesn't sound better.
Right.
I don't know how to call them. You guys know what I'm talking about out there. I think we've danced around it enough that you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, modern Hellenists.
Right. Right. Okay.
Right.
Like Hellenized Jews, like Greco Jews. Okay. So I guess we have to find a term for these people. Anyway,
they would call themselves progressives.
Progress. I reject that description.
But they self-identify as progressives, correct? I'm just saying in terms of if that person was talking
to you. Fine, I self-identify as correct. So they'll be progressive and I will be correct.
Maka, you're not, okay? I also identify you as correct, okay?
I don't know how to describe them. Okay, I think we.
Self-identify as correct. Tweet that, Maka.
Anyway, so you have Jews who reject the Torah as an important component of Judaism, who reject the land of Israel as an important component of Judaism, and who are embarrassed of authentic Jewish things, and they celebrate Hanukkah, right? Because Hanukkah is a Jewish holiday. It's one of the many Jewish holidays, and it's nice, right? And you're lighting candles. And it's beautiful, and it's the holiday that comes out, of course, in America and really throughout the world. Hanukkah comes out as the opposing force, sort of, the Jewish Christmas. Right. Let's just call it that, the Jewish Christmas. And they're celebrating Hanukkah. And I always think to myself, now, there are a lot of holidays that you could say it's kind of funny that Jews who feel that way would celebrate, like Purim, for example. Okay? But Hanukkah, to me, is the penultimate ironic holiday for these Jews to celebrate, because it's literally about Jews who saw this like westernizing, sophisticated culture come in with all its advancements and all of its science and all of its worldliness. It comes in, and then a bunch of like dirty farm Jews from some corner in the hills of Judea, like creating a war, a physical and a propaganda war.
Right. It was in part a civil war. It was in part a civil
against
war. Nobody wants to talk about it, but it was
those people, not just the Greeks and those like occupiers, but all their friends on the ground who were their neighbors. Now, I don't know if it was actually in the same. Well, yeah, in the same towns, even in the same towns.
It starts with the first blow.
Right. The first blow is the killing of a Jew.
Right. Who wanted to offer up a pig in Modin.
Right. Who agreed to offer a pig according to the demands of the Greeks. The Greeks demanded that they offer a pig, and one Jew, in order to like appease them, was like, fine. We can offer a pig, whatever. And the Maccabees flipped out, and they're like, red line. Like, you have crossed the red line. You're not going to offer a pig. And they killed that Jew.
Well, everybody knew in Modin, don't mess with Mati.
Yeah. So, and that's how it started. And of course, you know, we know the overarching story. Like, the Greeks, they come and they tell us we can't do Brit Milah, and they tell us that we can't worship the one God. And so we push them back, right? But it's like, it's miraculous, and it's miraculous, and we found this oil, and the oil lasted for 8 days, and that's not supposed to happen.
The 8 days story is not in the Book of Maccabees 1 or 2. It's not in any historical books. It's in the Talmud. It's a beautiful story.
So that's a historical book?
No. That's a book written 200 years later, and not more than 200 years later, more like 600 years later, final redacting. And it's not even in the Yerushalmi. It's a story in the Babylonian Talmud. It's a beautiful story. It's a story of light. But just so you understand, it's not part of the historical, you know, line. I'm not poo-pooing it, but I am saying,
yeah, do not take away from us our 8 days of oil, Yishai.
You know, I heard Rav Melamed say to us.
Which Rav Melamed?
Rav Zalman Melamed.
The father.
The father said, it's a way of describing that God was with them, because there were some people who, you know, deny that this was true and miraculous and the right way to go. So there's like a miraculous story that was either, you know, at the time or added on later, however it is. But my point to you is just,
we don't know.
But understand that is
part of the fundamental story of Hanukkah.
No.
For most people.
Right. But it's not part of the fundamental story of Hanukkah. It's a midrash of Hanukkah. You know what I'm saying? It's not the key story.
The key story is that God was with us, that we retook the temple, that we consecrated the menorah, that we lit it with pure oil. That is all miraculous. That's all plenty miraculous.
No doubt.
Yes, that's all plenty miraculous. And when I see that these, like,
can you imagine shaking Judah Maccabee's hand? I'd like to shake his hand. I'd like to feel his hand. I'd like to think about things like that. I'd like to feel the roughness of his hand. And just,
well, you know, and they talk about the Messianic era in which all the greats who've gone before will come back. So maybe one day you will get to.
But you know, people say to you, "Who would you like to meet?
Who you'd like to meet?"
No, just right now, it just came
right,
to me.
Right, I'm at like, this moment, I'm yeah, like, that I'm would
like,
be
I'm
something.
Like, I would like to meet Judah Maccabee. I would like to.
I'd like to see the family, just the Maccabean family, just walk down the street. That's what I would like.
I would like him to show me. I'm like, can I see Apollonius's sword? Can I see
that? Yeah, can I hold that?
Can I just want to see it? And I want to shake his hand. I can feel the big,
meaty hand.
Yeah.
Or it wasn't. Or he was some like little rabbi. Who was just like a jiu-jitsu warrior.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And he was an extremely skilled tactician, no question about it.
Right. So anyway, I guess you know, we don't need to beat a dead horse, but I just think that that like now is a good time. The Hanukkah period is a good time to understand one of the major to recalibrate yourself to the fundamental values of Judaism.
Right. Very good.
That's what the Maccabees would have wanted. That's number one. But number two is that Hanukkah is really about that stuff. It is not about, you know, there's so many children's books that I cannot buy for my kids. I love Jewish, you know, like Jewish children's books And I like them in English or Hebrew or whatever. And there, in Hebrew, obviously, there's way more. But in English, sometimes you want to buy a book. And it's not easy, Ishai. Because so many children's books about Hanukkah are like, I went to my grandma's house and she made latkes and we had them. Do you want it with sour cream or do you want it with applesauce? And then she gave me a gift, and she gave me a gift for 8 days.
Yeah.
For the 8 days that the light lasted, the miraculous oil that they found lasted after the Jews cleaned up the temple and were able to worship God again. And while those are nice, okay, that is really nice. I'm not dissing it.
Right.
It scrapes out all the depth of the story.
Right. That's ironically why I get a little emotional about that Peter, Paul, and Mary song, Light One Candle. Because within that song, Light One Candle...
We should play that.
Well, I don't know if I have rights to play it, whatever, but like, if just that song, Light One Candle, if you listen to the words, it's like, it's not about latkes and
right,
and
sour eight
cream.
Days, eight crazy right. nights.
It's not about eight crazy nights. It's about like, these people fought. You know, that
like Judaism would survive and that
right.
the Jewish people would survive.
Right. And the song like.
Right. And what the incredible sacrifice that they, the sacrifices that they made right. and all the blood that flowed so that we could hold on to this flame. And that's the miracle.
I love that song. That's why it does. I'm like, oh, you got it. You got
yeah,
it.
Yeah. You're even. You may have it. To stop the recording for a second.
No, even Elazar, you know, Elazar wanted to kill the Greek king and he thought it was on an elephant. He ran under the elephant, which was a tank in those days.
Right.
It was here, not so far away here. I think in Beit Sur here, not so far away. And he stabbed that elephant in the stomach and
right, and
crushed
died
him,
with it.
And they pulled his body out afterwards. You know what I mean? And he gave his life for that. Just that, you know?
Right,
just
and that was one of the brothers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was one of the Maccabee brothers. He was important.
There was treachery. Shimon was killed through treachery and all kinds
right,
of
right, it's
really,
a messy story.
Yeah, it's a messy story. Interestingly enough, my friend Arthur points out there's really no good movies about the Maccabees.
That would be such an epic, because it's also, it's not like a happy-go-lucky story of
no.
like everything working out.
No.
So it would make an amazing Hollywood film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's you know, and it's a long protracted story.
It'd make a good Netflix series.
Yeah, it's a you know better just as good as any of those Norse type things. You know what I mean? And you know the Viking
or
stuff that they have.
Things with dragons.
Out there. Yeah, no, but they have these like very realistic shows with the I forgot the name of it, but you know The Last Kingdom and that kind of stuff. Like this was boy. And by the way, Malk, it's not beating a dead horse; it's petting. A very lively horse, okay? We continue.
Giving it carrots.
That's right, giving it carrots. By the way, just one more point on Hanukkah. My good friend Yitz from Jay Brick.
Yeah.
jbrick.com.
Where you can buy the most adorbsy, speaking of Hanukkah, where you can buy adorable little Lego kits that are Jewish for your kids.
That's right. He was flown in by the new Lego store in Tel Aviv. In order to create a Guinness Book of World Records, Chanukiah, it's got 165,000 pieces. And you can see it on my Facebook page. And Yitz is in country right now. I have also hired him, but what's the word? Commissioned him.
Commissioned, yeah.
I commissioned him to make a model of the Ma'aras HaMechpelah, the Tomb of the Patriarchs and Matriarchs in Hebron. And the model's almost complete. But he was whisked into the Holy Land.
So cool.
For his skill, because he's very skilled, to make this unbelievable.
Huge, gorgeous Chanukiah.
In Tel Aviv.
So nice. I just want to say so many I'm proud of, okay?
Yes.
I'm proud of Yitz.
Yes.
Because that is so cool that he got such a name for himself that he's like known throughout the Legoverse.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
One. Two. Proud of you, Legos. For wanting to do something nice and Jewish.
The Lego store in Tel Aviv.
Hanukkah.
This is the Lego store in Tel Aviv.
I want to say, kol hakavod to you, Lego store in Tel Aviv. What a great idea. So right on. And for bringing in a guy who's like an expert, that's just So cool.
In Tel Aviv.
In Tel Aviv.
I love it.
Leah and I went to Tel Aviv this week.
Oh.
We had such a nice time. She had a day off of school. And for those of you who don't know, Jewish children here in the land of Israel oftentimes have 6 days a week of school. Leah happens to have 5 days a week, but on Fridays I can't go do anything because Friday is the day that I make Shabbos happen. So we never go, but she had a day off during this week and we decided to do something we never ever do, which is to go to Tel Aviv, a place just that we never find ourselves. Like, we never really have a reason to go to Tel Aviv. We're obviously more Jerusalem type people. And we decided to take the train. We took the train in. We walked around Tel Aviv and everyone was so nice to us. And Tel Aviv is such a nice town. And we went up to the top of Azrieli Tower and saw the unbelievable view. And we just had such a great time. And so I'm very extra happy because I feel a little more connected to Tel Aviv than I did before, having spent a beautiful day there.
Thank the Lord. And Malka, I believe that you and I should make it into a personal Zionist challenge.
Yeah.
To learn Tel Aviv, learn to love Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
And it is an awesome city. And now that the train has basically made it that it's 30 minutes apart from Yerushalayim on a train. So basically it's like these cities are much closer now. You know, and there's all these books, you know, Rome and Jerusalem, Athens and Jerusalem, all kinds of stuff. But now it's Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. It's these sister cities.
Uh-huh.
Yes. I announced today the sisterhood between Tel Aviv
and
Jerusalem.
Came up with that, eh?
Yep, right here. Just it happened right here.
Look at you.
Unbelievable.
You have created something that was never thought of before.
The Ishai Fleischer Show, where things really happen.
Yeah.
All right, Malka, Hanukkah's coming.
I have an exciting announcement about latkes.
Okay, go ahead, Malkies.
I was on the Prohibition Pickle website.
Yes.
There's a big machloket in our house about latkes.
Machloket, controversy.
Yeah. To me, latkes are the better Hanukkah
food. We do not have a controversy or controversy between us. I cannot eat oily latkes well.
But you can eat sufganiyot.
Correct.
You can eat jelly donuts.
You bet.
So explain that.
I don't need to explain it. It's a fact.
I love
you
them
know?
So much though.
And gesunte hate.
Yeah, but the kids don't really like them, which means I'm in the minority. I can't. What, I'm going to make latkes for myself?
Okay, well you can't.
So maybe I'm going
to
order some.
Strong arm me, Malka, to eat what you know that.
Maybe I'm going to order some from Prohibition Pickle. Then
you do
they
that.
Have three kinds of latkes.
Okay.
On their website.
Okay.
One is just potato.
Right.
One is sweet potato called Eastern latkes. That's interesting. And then there's one that's kind of exciting. It's called Yapchik latkes. Have you heard of this Yapchik?
God bless you.
Do you know what that is?
No.
I only learned about that in the last few years. It is a potato kugel, but then you put meat pieces inside of that.
Now we're talking.
Yeah. So this is a Yapchik latke.
God bless you. I would like a Yapchik.
Yeah, we would like a Yapchik.
Yeah. I'm all...
So I'm thinking maybe some Yapchik latkes. And you and me, Yishai, are you going to be recording a show during Hanukkah?
I might walk in the desert over there and record a few words.
Yeah, because we're going down to the desert. We're going down to Timna, which is north of Eilat. And maybe we should take some latkes with us.
Yeah.
On Prohibition Pick Hell.
That's right. That would be really great. And that's
fantastic. And they have these like cool toppings that you can put on top. One is called sweet and spicy apple chutney. That sounds good.
See, there's a lot of words on the prohibitionpickle.co.io website that I don't know or don't know how to pronounce. Like, I don't know what a chutney is.
It's a sauce. It's okay. Like a choppy PC sauce. It's like, it will be like, it looks like applesauce with like pieces inside.
But these are words that are like, you read these words because you like cookbooks and stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't know these words.
So now I'm telling you.
Okay, chutney.
And they have something called Indian cucumber quote unquote yogurt dip because I think it's parv.
Right.
I think it's called raita.
That sounds really good. My mom would love it, but. For me, no thanks.
Yeah, but you put that on a latke?
That does sound good, maybe.
And then they have something called chipotle.
Wait a minute, that's not a latke. That's a gyro. Okay, you put a meat. You're saying meat a meat latke.
Yeah.
You're just hiding the fact that this is actually a Greek thing.
Oh my gosh,
this is it. This is just
this
a,
is disgusting. No, it's not a Greek one. It's an Indian one.
You're just hiding it.
No,
I know what a gyro is.
How could you accuse Chaim at Prohibition Pickle of Greco-ness. He is trying to bring all the flavors, all the nitzotzot from around the world and put them into the latke so that you will fully lakdish the latke.
That's beautiful, Malka. That is really, really beautiful. You're right. I didn't think of that, and I repent. And what you're actually
it's not
doing...
Greek, although that is interesting.
Yeah. It's,
like, can you use feta
Malka,
cheese
Malka, you give me any
Hanukkah?
Word. Give me any word.
Any word.
Okay.
And I'll tell you.
Yeah. Like okay. Yiro, like Yapchik, okay? All right, that's really good stuff. We also have a lot of other friends that make the show so happy and so strong. First thing, of course, we just mentioned Jay Brick, and it's great stuff. You should definitely check out Jay Brick.
And Prohibition Pickle.
And prohibitionpickle.co.il. I also want to mention our good friends at Retro Watch Guy, which is awesome watches from the 60s and 70s. Classic watches, mostly men's watches, that are like just cool and a great add-on to your life. You put on one of those watches. Right now, I'm wearing, look, Maka, I'm wearing my Tissot.
Yeah, it's looking really good. Your regular watch battery.
Yes, my regular watch.
Has worn out, so now you're wearing your Shabbos watch.
That's right. And this watch does not need no battery because it's automatic, which is a beautiful invention, which basically means the movement of your body winds it, and that's really fun.
Yes, we asked a rabbi about how to properly wear such a watch on Shabbat.
Correct. Good. It was a good question that we gave. Today, I want to talk about this beautiful Malka. Take a look at this. I have a soft spot for Omegas because my parents used to like Omega watches, and both my dad and mom had Omega watches. And this is a groovy Omega Seamaster Cosmic circa 1969. It's beautiful, and it's a manual winder, right? Look at that. It's a beautiful, it's a, just a beautiful, beautiful, well-manned, Malka, you know what? Give me a description for this, Malka. Give me a description.
Shiny. It looks like someone from NASA would wear it.
Yep. So it looks like the moon a little bit, right? Silver face. No. No,
I don't know that I would have compared it to the moon. I just think it's a, I think it's a beautiful, like old school. It looks kind of like a 60s or 70s watch.
And it's really fun to wear 60s or 70s watches. It's definitely a style thing. And yesterday I was wearing my Tissot at the Knesset, and it was just like really fun. And it's just like, it's just like people are like, oh, okay, like look, this guy's styling, you know. And it's fun for Shabbos, fun for your son-in-law. Fun for a special occasion or with the tuxedo that you have to wear or whatever it is. It's just a great way to...
Yeah, it's a conversation piece.
Yeah, nobody has asked me about it, but I see people being like, nice.
Cool watch. That's cool,
dude. He's sporting a cool watch there. You know, and we men folk, we don't have so many things
like
accessories. So it's fun to have a watch that's cool and fun and comes from like a history thing. It's like a 50-year-old watch, but it's working like it is today. It's like having a cool, you know, it's having a really cool vintage car, but for a lot less money.
A lot less, yeah, exactly.
And a little bit more practical because you still have to drive your family around. But this is a fun way. So it's retrowatchguy.com. Really fun, great family, great folks, and it's a family business of good folks that love the land of Israel and love Judaism. So check out RetroWatchGuy.com and, of course, coupon code Yishai,
bang,
and you get, I think it's 10% off, whatever it is. It's a great percentage point to buy an awesome watch. And the one that I liked, this Omega watch, is you know, it's not cheap. It's like $1,000, but it's worth it. But there's many, many different kinds out there. They're different price points. Oh, here's a cool one. Which is like, I like square watches. I was at the Knesset yesterday and me and this guy started talking just about, he was wearing a square belt. He had like a cool square belt.
Like a belt buckle?
Yeah, belt buckle. And I'm like, I like that buckle. He's like, it's from Kenneth Cole. And he sent me the link.
I don't know, guys talk. He sent you the link?
Yeah, he's a really
That's
cool
nice
guy.
Of him.
Yeah, he's a really cool guy. It's
like a person who like, you eat something that they made and it's so good. And then they're like, I will send you the recipe right after this.
Yeah, it was fun. It was really fun. So check out Retro Watch Guy. Really great stuff. I still really like, I think, I personally, if I was right now, in the market, I really like the Seiko that's for less than $500 right now, and it is an awesome Seiko. I talked about it a few weeks ago. It's a dive watch. It's really cool, and you know, Japanese and old school. It's from 1968. It's a beauty. Look at this one, Malka. Yeah? All right, there you go. That's awesome.
Pretty.
So we also have that. We also have the folks at JewishPress.com that do a great job putting out the news every day, and if you go to JewishPress.com, they put out a story about me meeting with bringing Thomas Friedman to Hebron. That was a story on JewishPress.com recently. I had let's see what else. There was a few other stories that were covered about stuff that I got to do recently. I'm having a lot of fun out there. Including,
sure. Well, yesterday, I wouldn't call it fun, but we had an event yesterday, a significant event, Ishai.
Well, we had first my dad's Yahrzeit, yep. His day of passing, his right. Hilulah, which is the Israeli version of Yahrzeit, which is a lot more fun. Hilulah means the party, the celebration of my father's life. It was 20 years.
Wow.
So this week's show is dedicated to Alexander Ben Benjamin, who celebrated 20 years of being in the next world yesterday. And we had a wonderful time telling stories, having l'chaims, saying the religious parts of the ceremony, and remembering, you know, the person who gave you know, me and my sister and brother life, and started us off on this trail and challenge and adventure called life, had a wonderful and a very amazing life himself, and with wonderful abilities, and so we celebrated him yesterday, and from there I went to the Knesset, and got the chance to translate for Itamar Ben-Gvir as he spoke for the first time to foreign press in a big event hosted by the GPO, the government press office. So that was pretty exciting as well. I'm going to play that audio on the program today.
Well, great.
That's right, Malka. So that's it, Malka. We have a lot of preparations now to do for vacation down in the south of Israel and getting to relax a little bit.
Relax. Tons and tons and tons of packing.
Yeah.
Entertaining the kids.
Right.
Sleeping on the ground.
Right.
And then coming home.
Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. It sounds like
a
dream.
Yeah, yeah, Baruch Hashem. Yeah, no, it's really amazing. We love it. And it's a wonderful opportunity to get some fresh air in every sense of the word.
We got to get firewood. I remember I got to tell our friend to borrow
right,
to get firewood.
Some firewood.
That's
good
right.
Call.
We got to get firewood. That's about it, Malka. There's also tons of other news, but forget about it. It's not important. You know, coalition news, the battles over, you know, the powers of the incoming minister of national security, and other battles around the world. There's definitely a lot going on out there. But I do think that it's for me personally, Hanukkah is a time to detach a little bit, to unwind a little bit, to connect with the land and spiritual things. And I hope you use Hanukkah and don't just work through Hanukkah the whole time. Try to really enjoy it and certainly spend time looking at those candles and thinking about history and thinking about Hashem's providence through history. I think that's really important. Anything
right.
else, Malka?
Agree. No, that's it. I just want everyone to have the nicest holiday. We have to decorate the house. I forgot.
That's right.
So I have to decorate the house. I have to buy the stuff for the trip.
You have to do a lot of work for your vacation.
Yeah. But it's great. It's such a blessing, you know. It's such a blessing that we have to be here in the land of Israel for the holidays. And Hanukkah, the end of Hanukkah is the end kind of my favorite part of the year. That's I love right. the whole year, and the year is wonderful. But my favorite part of the year is from Elul, from Rosh Chodesh Elul, until the end of Hanukkah.
It's funny you say that, because some people say that the end of, some of the opinions are, the end of the tshuva season is Hanukkah.
And then it starts right back up again. So
right.
Don't worry
but,
about it.
But just so you know, like that is a framework of time. That's
interesting.
Right. You're right.
So that's my favorite. That's my favorite time of the year. And so it's a sweet time, but it's a little bit bittersweet.
That's Hanukkah. Hanukkah's yeah. bittersweet. You know that Hillel is the one that had the opinion that you light
Rabbi
one
Hillel.
Candle, Rabbi Hillel, that you light one candle and you go up to eight. But Shammai had an opinion that you start with eight and you go down to one. And I always like that opinion. I always like you start big, but then it comes down to one little
light.
Candle. Like there's something so true about that. There's such a, and I like to think about that when we light the candles.
Well, you see that the rabbis brought down that discussion because it was a beautiful thought.
Right. And there's something like, it's like a countdown, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
One, and then it's just one.
It's just one. Yeah. I like that. I like that, Shammai opinion. And you know, I wish we had some way to like a little bit honor that. In any case, Malka, thank you very much. Next up, we still, the show goes on. We have the audio from Itamar Ben-Gvir speaking to the GPO's big conference of foreign media. And we also have an hour long with the triumphant return of Rav Mike Foyer to the show. So we have a lot to talk about here on the Yishai Fleisher Show. Stay tuned, stay strong, stay connected. The Israel Podcast will be right back. Thank you very much to Ben Bresky, Yocheved, Moshe Herman, Tabitha, and Lou for helping us on the show and getting it out to the world. You guys are the best. And thank you to all our supporters as well. Go to buymeacoffee.com/Yishai, and that helps the podcast keep going, be broadcast like the light of Hanukkah. So we'll be right back, and shalom. All right, folks, that was really fun to talk with Malka. And now let's hear the appearance of Itamar Ben-Gvir, Knesset member Itamar Ben-Gvir, at the GPO's Government Press Office's Foreign Media Summit in the Knesset, in Jerusalem, and specifically in the Knesset, where Itamar Ben-Gvir spoke with him and I translated. So let's take a listen.
Otzma Yehudit, in Hebrew, we translate it as a Jewish slang. He has gained interest and great popularity in Israel. And on a personal note, I know this gentleman since 1994, when I cover his action as a journalist on the hills of Judea and Samaria. One thing I can say for sure, okay, we are all journalists in this room. The camera sure loves him. And you can see it, you will decide on yourself. The international media, since the last election in Israel, beginning of November, actually love to hear what does he have to say in terms of what's going on now in the Middle East conflict with the Palestinians. So, and this is actually the first time that you are actually performing properly in front of the foreign media in Israel. And as I said to you, most of the foreign media that come to Israel want an interview with M.K. Itamar Ben-Gvir. So it's an honor to ask you to come and to hear what you have to say, please.
Shalom, shalom.
שלום לכולם.
מצטער שהאנגלית שלי לא ברמה של לדבר ברציפות, ולכן אני אדבר בעברית ותרגם אותי כאן.
I'm sorry that my English is not for fast speaking, but I'll be translating for you today.
ואני באתי להגיד לכם מה אנחנו בעצם רוצים לעשות כאן.
I came to tell you what we really want to do here today in the Knesset.
ועל מה אני נלחם.
What I'm fighting for.
במדינה שלנו.
In our state.
משום שיש לנו אויב, לכולנו אויב משותף.
We have a joint enemy, all of us.
וזה הג'יהאד.
And it's the jihad.
זה אלה שרוצים להפוך את כל העולם למשטר של חליפות.
It's those who want to turn the whole world into a caliphate.
אלה שחושבים שמי שהוא לא מוסלמי, אין לו זכות קיום כאן.
Those who think that if you're not Muslim, you have no right to live here.
אלה שפוצצו את מגדלי התאומים.
Same folks that blew up the Twin Towers.
אלה שנלחמים, נלחמים באנושות.
Those who fight humanity and civilization.
המצב שלנו במדינת ישראל הוא מצב שבו אנחנו לאורך כל השנים מתגוננים מאותם אלה.
The situation of the state of Israel is that we've been in a defensive posture from those people this whole time.
אני אוהב את המדינה שלנו.
I love our state.
אני אוהב את הארץ שלנו.
I love our land.
אני את ניצן, כמו שהוא הזכיר, מכיר כשהייתי נער.
I know Nitzan Haaretz from when I was a young man.
מאז גם שיניתי סגנון.
Nitzan Haaretz.
משם שיניתי סגנון, משם...
But since then I've changed a little bit.
אבל דבר אחד לא השתניתי.
But one thing I haven't changed about.
באהבה שלי לעם ישראל.
My love to the people of Israel.
ולאנושות כולה.
And the whole world, all the world's people.
אני רוצה להיות... השר לביטחון פנים במדינת ישראל.
I want to be the minister of national security, formerly minister of internal security.
ולדאוג לכולם.
And to care for everybody in our state.
לדאוג לדתיים וחילונים.
Religious and non-religious.
לדאוג ליהודים וערבים.
Jews and Arabs.
לדאוג לכל הילדים שלנו שיוכלו ללכת בטוח ברחוב.
To take care of all of our children so that they can walk on the streets in safety.
כי היום בישראל קשה ללכת ברחוב.
Because today in Israel it is hard to walk in the streets, it's scary.
בדרום,
in the south,
מרביצים ופוגעים לנשים כי הן יהודיות.
People strike and abuse women because they're Jewish.
לוקחים פרוטקשן.
Pay protection money to businesses.
פוגעים באנשים.
Hurt people.
בצפון יש פשיעה לאומנית, טרור חקלאי.
In the north we have other kinds of terror including farm terror. Taking of farmlands and bullying of farmers.
בירושלים יהודים מפחדים ללכת לכותל.
In Jerusalem there are places from which Jews are afraid to go to the Western Wall.
ובמרכז אנשים מרגישים לא בטוח.
And in the center people do not feel confident.
ואני רוצה להחזיר את השליטה לעם ישראל.
I want to return the control to the nation of Israel.
זו הארץ שלנו.
This is our land.
זה הבית שלנו.
This is our home.
מזמן שאברהם אבינו הסתובב והלך כאן בין השדות.
From the time that Abraham our forefather walked here in the fields.
אני גר בחברון.
I live in Hebron.
זו העיר שבה נקברו אברהם ויצחק ויעקב.
This is the city where the forefathers and mothers are buried, Abraham and Sarah, Isaac, Rebecca, Jacob and Leah.
ואנחנו הולכים שם ומרגישים את ההיסטוריה של כל כך אלפי שנים שאנחנו גאים להיות חלק ממנה.
And when we walk there, we feel the history of thousands of years and we're so proud to be there.
לאורך כל ההיסטוריה רדפו את עם ישראל.
Throughout all of history, Jewish people have been persecuted.
פרעו,
from Pharaoh,
Aman,
to Haman,
ועד ההיסטוריה הלא כל כך רחוקה כמו היטלר ימח שמו.
And to the history that is not so long ago, to Hitler, may his name be erased.
ואנחנו נאבקנו כדי להמשיך לחיות.
And we have fought in order to continue to survive.
כדי להמשיך לבנות כאן מדינה יהודית, בית שלנו.
To continue to build here a Jewish state, our home.
וכדי להסתובב כאן בגאווה בארץ שלנו.
And to walk proudly in our land.
אני רוצה להגיד לכם דבר אחד. אלה שרוצים לפגוע בנו, הם רוצים לפגוע בכם.
I want to say one thing to you, which is those that want to hurt us, they also want to hurt you.
יכול להיות שהם רוצים להתחיל ולפגוע קודם כל בעם ישראל.
It might be that they want to start with us, the Jewish nation.
אבל השלב הבא זה אתם, חלילה.
But God forbid, you are next afterwards.
וכל אחד בעולם שלא מסכים איתם.
And all those who don't agree with us, that's what they want to strike at.
אני מאלה שחושבים שאסור להיכנע להם.
I'm one of those people who believes that we should not surrender to them.
לא צריך להתקפל בפניהם.
We should not fold before them.
לצערי, הרבה פעמים מפעילים עלינו לחץ.
Sadly, a lot of times pressure is put on us.
שנתקפל, שנכנע.
So that we surrender, we fold.
שניסוג.
That we should retreat.
אבל מעבר לדוגמאות בהיסטוריה שכל פעם שנכנענו רק קיבלנו עוד יותר טרור.
But past the historical experiences that every time that we surrender, we only get more terror.
מעבר לדוגמאות כמו בגוש קטיף, שגירשנו שם 10,000 יהודים מהבית וקיבלנו טילים בבאר שבע ובאשדוד.
There are many such examples like the one of the 2005 disengagement where we left the Gaza Strip and we gave that land over and then in the end we just got missiles onto באר שבע and אשדוד.
מעבר לאוסלו, הסכמי אוסלו, שבהם הבאנו את ערפאת לכאן, נתנו להם נשקים.
Including the horrific Oslo experience, which we brought Arafat to rule in this land, we gave them weapons.
ובנשק הזה נרצחו 2,000 יהודים.
And with these weapons that we handed them, 2,000 Jews were murdered.
הרי שגם ההיסטוריה ארוכת השנים מוכיחה.
Our long history proves
שעם טרור לא מדברים בדרך של כניעה.
That with terror, the way to talk with terror is not with surrender language.
שבטרור נלחמים.
You fight terror.
שבטרור מכריעים אותו.
You defeat terror.
וזה מה שאני רוצה לעשות.
And that's what I came to do.
חשוב לי להגיד.
It's important for me to say.
שחלילה לא כל הערבים טרוריסטים.
It is important for me to say that, God forbid, please do not misunderstand me, I am not suggesting that all Arabs are terrorists.
יש הרבה ערבים שרוצים לחיות כאן בשלום.
There are many Arabs here that want to live in peace and in coexistence.
ואני נאבק גם בשבילם, גם בשביל שהילדים שלהם יוכלו להסתובב ברחוב שלא בטוח.
And I'm fighting also for them, so that their children can play and walk in the streets in safety.
אבל אני נאבק גם בשבילכם.
But I'm fighting also for you.
כל העולם שמאמין בדמוקרטיה,
the whole world that believes in democracy,
שמאמין בזכויות אזרח,
that believes in human rights,
שמאמין בזה שכל עם יכול וצריך לחיות ולהיות חופשי בארצו,
that believes that every nation has a right to live and to be free on their nation and their land.
חזרנו לבית שלנו.
We have returned to our home.
אחרי כל כך הרבה שנות גלות.
After so many years of diaspora of exile.
ואנחנו רוצים לחיות כאן.
We want to live here.
ולהמשיך את מה שעשו אבות אבות של אבותינו, את ההיסטוריה שבתנך כתובה ואנחנו כל כך מאמינים בה.
And we want to do what our forefathers and our parents did, that's written in the Bible, that we've done for thousands of years.
זהו, אם תרצו לשאול כמה שאלות, אני אשמח, אני מתנצל שאני באתי מוועדה, חוזר לוועדה, עובדים כאן מאוד מאוד קשה בכנסת, מקווה שנצליח להקים ממשלה.
Knesset member Itamar Ben-Gvir, and soon to be a minister, is in the midst right now of a session debating a law that's very important to him, which is the strength of the Minister of Internal Security, of National Security, and he's in the middle of that right now, but he's allowing for, he says he works very hard for our safety and security, but he is allowing for one or two questions.
Okay, so member of the Knesset, Ben-Gvir, 2 weeks from now, is going to be the National Security Minister.
It's not Knesset.
David Parsons, please introduce yourself. And
yes. David Parsons, I'm with the International Christian Embassy here in Jerusalem. We thank you for coming in and addressing us today. These are Christians from all over the world, but there are some of us who live here. And we have a rule that we don't interfere with Israeli democracy. We will go out and defend Israel, support Israel, respect Israeli democracy, tell others to do that. And I think, but you know, you still get a little emotionally attached to everything here. And when Prime Minister Netanyahu, it looks like he's going to return to power now, there was a lot of fist bumping and toasting and all. But there's also genuine concerns about your party and you in particular, because you do have a history of a photo of Baruch Goldstein on your wall, of defending someone who burned a church in the Galilee, defending Jews who were charged with terrorism against Arabs. I'm a lawyer too. I know you got to provide legal services to everyone, but I also have friends and colleagues who saw you show up at a protest against the Kehillah congregation here in Jerusalem and join the incitement of those who were going to attend a Shabbat service, and it put everyone in fear, including the children. But I've consulted, we've consulted with our long time Israeli friends like Josh and Nitzan and all, and everyone says you've changed. And so what can you say here to assure us that you're going to work within this government to work for democratic rights, minority rights? You've mentioned some of this, but especially for religious freedom.
Let's make order of things. You spoke of cases that I represented as a lawyer. As a lawyer, I have to represent all kinds of cases. Especially since I thought that those people were innocent and not what was claimed against them.
אני לא מאמין בלשרוף כנסיות.
I don't believe in burning churches.
אני לא מאמין בלפגוע באנשים.
I don't believe in hurting people.
וזה אף פעם לא היה.
And these things did not take place from that person.
כן האמנתי בגיל צעיר כשהייתי נער שצריך לגרש מכאן את כל הערבים.
When I was a young man, I believed that we should kick out all the Arabs from this land.
חשבתי שכולם אותו דבר וצריך להוציא אותם מכאן.
And I thought that everybody was the same thing and we have to get them out of here.
אבל זה רק שהייתי בן 17.
I was 17 then.
היום אני בן 46.
Today I'm 46 years old.
נולדו לי 6 ילדים.
I have 6 children.
למדתי משפטים.
I learned law.
פתחתי משרד עורכי דין.
I opened a successful law practice.
הפכתי להיות חבר כנסת.
I became a Knesset member.
ואני בטוח שגם אתה, דברים שחשבת בגיל 17-18, יש דברים שקצת השתנו. ככה זה טבעו של עולם ואדם.
I believe that things that you believed when you were 17 years old, you may not believe anymore, and that's the nature of this world, to change some things.
מי שמכיר אותי יודע שמה אכפת לי? אכפת לי מהמצב שלנו בארץ, אכפת לי שנוכל להסתובב בביטחון, אכפת לי שנהיה בכל מקום גאים להיות ולהסתובב כאן במדינה הזאת, אכפת לי שהביטחון יחזור לאזרחי ישראל.
If anybody knows me, they know, what do I really care about? I really care about that the citizenry of Israel, all citizens, can walk in this land in safety. And another thing is important to me. We have such a long, we're a nation with such a long history.
ובאמת כל גיבורי התנך שאנחנו קוראים עליהם.
I walk in this land and I walk in the footpaths of Joshua ועוד מי אמרת?
דוד המלך.
King David and Joshua, these great people, and Joshua who walked this land, and I'm walking in their footsteps.
ואני מרגיש שאנחנו, יש לנו שליחות כאן.
And I feel that we have a mission here.
כתוב אצלנו גם שאנחנו צריכים להיות אור לגויים.
It says in our books that we're supposed to be a light unto the nations.
ואני רוצה שנהיה אור לגויים.
I want us to be a light unto the nations.
ואנחנו באמת אור כזה.
And indeed we are such a light.
ישראל היא הדמוקרטיה היחידה במזרח התיכון.
We're the only democracy in this Middle East.
בסוריה הורגים אנשים על ימין ועל שמאל.
In Syria they kill people on left right.
בכל מיני מקומות אחרים אין ממש דמוקרטיה.
There's no democracy in our region. There's no, but he means by that no liberal rights, no basic rights for people.
ואנחנו כאן עושים דמוקרטיה.
Here we do democracy and rights.
אז לכן חשוב לי שכשיש כל מיני כאלה שתוקפים אותנו,
there are many folks that attack us, so it's important for me.
תזכרו תמיד כולכם שאנחנו נלחמים למען הדמוקרטיה, ויש אחרים שפוגעים כל הזמן בדמוקרטיה.
Remember that we are fighting for democracy and there are those who want to get rid of it and are fighting against it.
Thank you. I'll let you know my doctor voted for you, my barber voted for you.
We're not interfering with politics here. Yeah. Okay, so last question, please. Yes, please. Introduce yourself, please.
Hi, I'm Felicia Ferreira from Sweden, Swedish daily newspaper Dagen. So nice to listen to all of you here. When you look back in a few years, what will be your biggest accomplishment by then? What will Israel look like in, say, 5 to 10 years?
אני רואה אותנו יכולים לגדול, לפרוח.
I see us growing, flourishing.
ולהיות את החזון של הנביאים שלנו.
To fulfill the vision of our prophets.
טוב, הנביאים שלנו כותבים על האור הזה שיצא מכאן.
Our prophets write about this great light that's supposed to come forth from here.
על האהבה הגדולה לכולם.
The great love towards the world.
עכשיו, אבל יש קשיים.
But there are hardships.
משום שאנחנו היום במדינת ישראל מותקפים.
Because we here in the state of Israel are under attack.
יש לנו טרוריסטים בתוך המדינה.
We have terrorists from within the state.
יש לנו מדינות שכנות שחלקן עדיין חולמות להשמיד אותנו.
We have some neighbor states that still dream of destroying us completely.
יש לנו ארגונים כמו החמאס או החיזבאללה.
We have organizations like Hamas and Hezbollah on our borders.
שרק מחכים שאנחנו נושמד ויפגעו בנו.
And they're just waiting to destroy us and to strike us.
וכמובן יש את הסכנה האיראנית.
Of course you've heard of the Iranian threat.
שבונים להם גרעין ו זה מסוכן לא רק לנו אלא לכל העולם.
And they are in the midst of this nuclear effort, and that's not just dangerous for us but for the whole world.
אני מעריך שאני חושב שהמלחמה שלנו בהם, המאבק שלנו, זה גם המאבק שלכם.
I think that our fight with these elements is also your fight.
כשאני נלחם בחיזבאללה ובחמאס, ואני רוצה להילחם בחיזבאללה ובחמאס.
When I fight Hezbollah and Hamas, and I want to fight Hezbollah and Hamas.
אני חושב שאנחנו נלחמים גם בשם כל אחד בעולם שרוצה לחיות בעולם טוב יותר במדינה דמוקרטית.
I think I'm fighting for everybody in the world who wants to live in a safer, better world, in a democratic world.
כי חשוב לי להגיד משהו אחד. היום אמרתי את זה כבר, אבל אני אחזור על זה כי זה הדגש שלי כאן. היום זה אנחנו.
And I'm going to repeat myself because it's so important for me. This is the underlying theme.
היום זה אנחנו. אבל אני רואה מה קורה באירופה. מחר זה יכול לקרות כאן באירופה. במחרותיים בארצות הברית ובכל מקום בעולם.
I'm watching what's going on in the world and I see that this could happen in Europe and it could happen in the United States, it could happen in any place in the world, so he feels that this fight is for others as well.
אנחנו נלחמים את מלחמתו של העולם החופשי.
We are fighting the battle of the free world.
העולם הדמוקרטי.
The democratic world.
העולם שרוצה שאנשים יסתובבו ויגורו ויחיו.
A world that wants safety and for people to be able to walk around freely and to live
ובאמת יוכלו לגדל ילדים,
that they can grow children, that raise children in safety.
אני מאמין בשלום גם עם הערבים.
I believe in peace with the Arabs.
אבל שלום של שותפות, לא שלום של כניעה.
Right, peace of cooperation and not a peace of surrender.
אני מאמין שזה אפשר.
I believe it's possible.
אבל אנחנו נהיה חייבים לעשות דבר אחד לפני.
But we'll have to do one thing beforehand.
להילחם בטרור.
To fight the terrorists.
בשבילך, בשבילו, בשביל כולם.
For all of us, for all of you in this room.
Okay.
מר בן גביר, I'll say it in Hebrew and then I'll switch to English.
Mar Ben English, if I don't understand it,
I think that we can give you a passing grade with flying colors because Mr. Parsons asked you a very difficult question and you answered it straight on. Yeah. Will you commit to a continued dialogue with us, those who have been invited by the government of Israel from 50 countries around the world, in years to come, next year, in the following year, even when you are very important? And now you have time, but maybe next year you will not, and we want the Shana Ba Yerushalayim.
קודם כל, זה שאתה אומר שיש לי זמן, אני הייתי מציע שתשאר את אשתי.
First of all, you say that I have time, you should ask my wife.
אני אמרתי לה שאני חוזר.
I told her I'm coming back.
אני חוזר ביום שישי בצהריים לבית.
I told her that I'm coming back on Friday, this is Friday afternoon.
It's going to be Shabbat.
Right, I'm in Knesset until Friday afternoon.
אני עוזר לה בלטעום את האוכל, זה אני עוזר.
I only help her by tasting the food, that's my only assistance that I give her.
היא גיבורה, אשתי גיבורה.
My wife is a hero.
אבל בוודאי, אני איש של דיאלוג, אני איש של שיחה, אני משוחח עם כל מי שרוצה. כמובן, 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 מדברים איתי גם על זה שערבים, ראשי רשויות וכל מיני רוצים לשוחח איתי, אני אומר, אני משוחח עם כולם. רק עם אלה שלא, שתומכים בטרור, איתם אני לא משוחח.
So I'm a...
יש לי בעיה.
So I'm a person of conversation, of dialogue, of interchange and debate. And a lot of Arab mayors are calling to me and asking to meet with me and from the Arab world in general, but I will only speak to those who reject terrorism outright. I will not speak to those who embrace terrorism.
All right, folks, that was Itamar Ben-Gvir, and I'd love to hear what you think about that. So write me an email, yishai@yishaifleisher.com. Let me know what you think about that and how, you know, what impressions you got. And in general, love to hear from you, and thank you so much for being on my team and interested in what we got to say out here in the land of Israel. You are beautiful, and we are so thankful. I'm so thankful to have you in my life. Next up is somebody I'm very thankful to have in my life, and that's Rav Mike Foyer. Rav Mike joined me on a Facebook Live, and we had all kinds of folks chatting with us from all over the world, and it was fun to have Rav Mike back on the show. So here we go, without further ado. Rav Mike Foyer joins me on the Yishai Fleisher Show, Israel Podcast. All right, and we are live here on the Yishai Fleisher Show, broadcasting to the world from Judea, and we're doing it via the awesome power of the internet right now, and I am very glad and thankful to have Rabbi Mike Foyer, Rav Mike, back on the show with us. Rav Mike, shalom and welcome.
It's been so long that you've forgotten my name, apparently.
Well, it's very good to have you back, and I'm very excited to have you here on the show. And let's hope both of you and I both are doing our internet best to communicate. And I'm excited, and we'll just have to hope that the light of Israel will overcome all the challenges of the wires and the wireless out there. Rav Mike, I've had a very long day today already. Today was the 20th. Of Cheshvan, and that means it was my father's yahrzeit, so that means his day of passing, and this year was the 20th, and I know that you also have a coming up day of passing of your father, and also 20th, is that correct?
No, it's going to be 23rd, right? Actually. No.
23rd, okay.
23rd, yeah.
All right, well, there you go. So that's a lot of years, and so I started the day with gathering a lot of friends and family to the Mount of Resting, Har Menuchot, here in Jerusalem. And we had a great event for my dad's yahrzeit. And we did the Psalms, we did the Kelmalei Rachamim prayer, and then we told stories. And when we finished telling stories, we went over to the cars and we took out lots of yummy salads and fun things that my mom and my wife and friends of the family, the rest of the family, and my sister and my sister-in-law made. And then we took out one bottle of whiskey and one bottle of vodka, and we had a real good old time of doing it. I have to say, I learned anything from the Irish,
to do a little bit of a wake when it comes to a yurt site. And
well, that sounds more like sounds more like a tailgate party than a wake.
Yeah, it's like a tailgate party. It's like a cemetery tailgate party. But this year was the 20th. And you know, I gave a big talk about last night. It came to me what I would talk about every year. I pick a theme, and this year I talked about dichotomies in my dad's personality and my father's personality, which was really fun. You know, I gave an example that on the one hand, he always reread and read a certain book. He had a certain Russian book that would read over and over again. So he was like really very locked into this book. But on the other hand, he had a tremendous breadth of knowledge in Tanakh and just knew all the texts of the Tanakh and would quiz me on it. And I would fail. And he just knew well. So that was just an example of, on the one hand, he like kind of had a provincial like lock into a certain book that he kind of gave him like, you know, Nachas, you know, what's that called in English? Like, it gave him pleasure to read that book.
Pleasure what he did, yeah.
Right. But on the other hand, he had other great breadths of knowledge, other things like that. But it was really fun, and that was special. Then I went to the Knesset, and this has been weeks in the making. The GPO, the Government Press Office, had a summit for foreign religious press.
What does that mean?
And foreign in that religious summit, press? Yes, foreign observant religious press, as I.e. Christian, et cetera, but other religions as well. And they were in a 4-day summit for the GPO, Government Press Office, and they really asked me to help them hear from Itamar Ben-Gvir. And I have been organizing this for weeks and weeks. And this included many layers. And then finally, on the day of, Knesset member Ben-Gvir was stuck inside of a committee meeting of a great import of a topic that's very close to him, which is broadening the responsibilities and the powers of the Minister of Public Security, or now we call it National Security. And so this was his law that he had brought up, and his basically a committee that was very important to him, and to pull him out of that committee was hard. Mm-hmm. And so I pretty much given up hope, and the GPO was pressuring me, and everybody was pressuring me, and there was 150 of these journalists. But finally he came to that plenum, to that the Jerusalem room, conference room, and he let him have it. He belted it out, and people were just ecstatic and found him to be charismatic. And yours truly did the simultaneous translation for it. So it was really a lot of fun, but a little bit of a pressury day. Then I went into that committee and I listened to some of the, I happened to hear like 3 or 4 speakers who were against the law that Itamar Ben-Gvir is pushing. In any case, it was quite an exciting day. Then I got home, ate a little soup, and got on the show with you. So it's been a very long and exciting day. So thank you very much for joining me. What about you? Are you having some exciting times out there?
You know, I'm just trying to stay in the daily grind. I mean, I feel like we had the holidays, and then I had my son's bar mitzvah, and then like I hadn't had any stretch of real focus for quite some time. So I've been productive on a project that you and I are working on, trying to keep up with the counseling. I had a couple clients today. You know, I feel like my whole day was bound up with story, which is not unusual for me, you know, in various ways, in the personal, on the national, on the professional level. It was a good day. It's a good day.
I know that you do a lot of work also through spiritual counseling. And I happen to know a bunch of people who need that right now. And you said something to me the other day, which I think was very powerful to me. You said it to me off the cuff, but you said to me that a lot of people do so much pain and so much hurt and damage to one another in marital situations. I guess because I know some people right now going through stuff, I felt that how much pain we inflict on one another. And what's your basic, I know what my basic advice is now, but what's your like, if you had to give a catch-all, your basic advice for the average marital strife people?
Aside from seek help, because it's important to always say that, because there's still a tremendous stigma against seeking help in as complicated a thing as marriage, despite the fact of the old cliche that if your car broke down or, God forbid, your child was sick, you'd go to the expert to help you fix the situation. But somehow, when people are struggling within marriage, when the most really, when I say that the amount of pain that people can cause within marriage, a lot of it has to do because it's the most personal side of life. And it's not intentional. It's not always malice. That happens too, God forbid. But it's just simply what happens when we feel vulnerable and threatened and frightened and sad and et cetera. So I would say the number one piece of advice I would give is take a deep breath and notice whether you're being the person that you actually want to be right now. Mm-hmm. Instead of focusing on the other person, take a deep breath and ask yourself, is this the person I really want to be? And before you start deciding whose fault that is or what, just ask that simple question. If the answer is no, then you start to take responsibility for changing things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Quite. I know exactly what you mean. And I think what you're talking about, if I would bring it down to like real examples, probably like if you're yelling at your kids or your spouse, like, is that the person that you want to be? And if you're short with somebody, like, because you came home and you're tired, but you've given everybody else a cheery face, are you going to give your family a cheery face? I know that happens to me. Sometimes I'm like, cheery face, nice, nice, nice. And I come home and I'm so exhausted that I'm already out of steam for my own family. That's, of course, a big mistake.
Also, people are lonely. People get sad. People struggle to communicate. And it's not always this sort of outward, like, you know, angry, sharp edges. Sometimes there's a very inward gap between who we are and who we want to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think on the positive side, one of the things that I want to tell everybody out there is like, try to really appreciate your spouse. See that your spouse is like working hard to keep you happy and well, and like be just like so appreciative. And I guess for me, I guess I use a very low, I would say it's a kind of very low grade, easy way to get myself back on track. Is I just look at the hardships of people in all kinds of situations. You know, I just had a friend of mine, his brother just died from cancer in 2 months after finding out, and he's a young man and has young children. And just like, I'm just like, if you just take a look for a second about what the not so impossible worst case scenario could be, and just be like, wow, like I should be so thankful for every minute of my life and every minute I get to spend with this family, with these good people who love me, who I love back. And I don't want to like record anything negative. I want to like really, you know, enjoy this while this beautiful time is here, and just not miss a second of it, and certainly not spoil it by pouring even a tiniest bit of poison into it.
Yeah. Gaining and maintaining that perspective is very important. I think what you're saying, and whether it's the sort of extreme sense of mortality that you're speaking about, or just the small sense of like, you know, wow, you know, like I feel like I'm a bad parent, but my kids all eat 3 meals today. They're wearing decent clothes. They got a roof over their heads and they went to school this morning. Those are enormous victories. And we're much quicker to punish ourselves for our failures than we are to celebrate our victories. You know, the other thing I would add to that is always look for the places where you can gain and maintain agency. A lot of the times we feel helpless in a relationship.
Gain and maintain what?
Agency. Agency. Mm-hmm. What is it I can do? You know, if I want more love in my life, I can give and do things to my spouse. It's a secret that people don't realize. We don't feel love toward others when they do for us. We feel the deepest love toward others when we do for them. If you mm-hmm. want to feel more love in your life, go out of your way to do things for the people for whom you want to feel that love. You know, so there's all kinds of methods, but the number one thing is they just realize you have way more agency than you realize in your life. And you avoid the type of thinking and the behavior patterns that rob you of the ability to act and the belief that your actions are sort of, you know, are effective. But I mean, Amen. We can go on forever on this one. I'll start charging it to half hour.
It's important. Mark. Yeah, that's right. It's important. It's important for all of us. And here on the Ishai Fleischer Show, we like to provide a little bit of comfort and advice to get out there.
Listen, because it's a scary world out there, man.
Yeah, and if people, if there's more happy marriages, more happy families, the world just has a better energy out there, and there's more kids growing up in a good way, and then there's more kids who know how to do it better in the next generation, and the world becomes a better place.
This, by the way, Moshe Herman. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, this is one of the things that we often miss, which is so crucial about the depth of commitment to Torah that can really gel a community together. Right? It's trite to talk about family values today, but nonetheless, we have to appreciate the fact that the family has always been the building block of human culture, of society, holds the context for the psycho-emotional development that produces the types of people who are empowered to build a future we actually want to live in. So therefore, the number one thing you can invest in is in your own family. It's actually a big challenge for a lot of professional men who feel like, oh, I'm doing big things. I'm trying to make real changes. And that may be true, maybe absolutely true. But sometimes there's an illusion that what happens at home is not as important. Whereas, you know, and even by the way, we say, oh, but it's on such a small scale. You never know, because your family is the sort of blessing that you cast forward into the future. Right, the more that you put into it, generations down the line. I mean, just think, you know, we're getting toward the end of the Book of Bereishit. It's basically a book on the struggles to be a functional family, if I wanted to be kind.
Right,
and here we are, literally millennia later, learning from and growing from in the millions. Just the Jews, we start adding Christians and Muslims, the other Abrahamic faiths, billions of people. And it puts the power of a family in a different light.
Yeah, and it's one way that we could tie in the two things that I wanted to talk about today, which is the Torah portion, and Hanukkah is really family, because Hanukkah is also very much a family story. It's a family story. But before we get to that, let's just say hi to all the friends that are out there. First, my man Moshe says, "Sup, bro," and I say right back to you, "Shalom, my brother Moshe," who gets out the show to the world and said, thank you very much. We have Lou, who is helping us produce the show. He says, Shalom, Yishai and Rav Mike. He says, looking and sounding great. Thank you very much.
We're overcoming our connectivity issues.
Somewhat. And then we get Cordial Saludo desde Cartagena, Colombia, which I think it means a cordial salute from the great state
greeting
of Colombia.
Yeah, yes.
That's for the
exactly.
So that makes me feel good. That's good. Colombia is great. And hello to, and I just want to say hello to Colombia and to the good people of South America. I have never been to South America. I've been as far as Cabo San Lucas, but I've never been any farther down there in that great continent. So
neither have I.
Maybe one day. Dawn Alvarado says, in marriages, we have to pray every time you get mad at your partner, because you need the patience to understand them. You get mad because they don't understand you, but you also have to understand them first.
It's very good advice. I agree, Don. Prayer is an enormous tool for putting that space between emotion and action that opens up possibilities other than just simply being reactive. I agree.
Good. And Sharad says, love from India. Woo!
Right back at you.
There's a big country. Speaking of a billion people, right there, just India.
That's right.
Wow.
God bless him.
That's powerful. I wonder what it feels like to be an Indian. I guess many times I've given speeches and I talk about stuff and I've given, I remember I once gave a speech to SIPA, which is, you know, Colombia's International School of Politics. Yeah. And a lot of them are on the left side of the political map.
No.
And the whole room was like this. They were like this. No. They were just nodding no. That's not. They were, what's that called? This motion is called a what?
Shaking your head.
Shaking your head. They were shaking their head no. But then there was two guys in the back and they were like, they're nodding their head yes. And it was two Indian fellas there who understood the plight of Israel and just understood it better. So shalom and love to India from Israel. Nika says, I hope my daddy, I would like my daddy to listen to some topics like this. He needs to be reminded. Amen. Bless your father. And Kathy says, thank you, Yishai Fleischer, for sharing some intimate and special memories of your late father with pro-Israel page currently on the blink. We apparently have unknown squatters that have taken over Facebook profile page and ultimately the pro-Israel page. So folks are fighting for space on the internet as well. So good luck with that, Kathy, and I hope you guys get back. And we have a shalom from the Philippines, from Nika. That's so cool. Never been to the Philippines. And we also have Dawn saying, watching from California, U.S. So the reason I love to read these things is because I find it so exciting to be able to talk to the world. And you guys are the world. You are the children.
We are the children.
That's right. That's right.
I saw it coming. Yeah. We're children of the 80s. There's nothing to be done.
That's right. And that's but it just really is really fun to be able to talk to the world. And God bless you guys out there. And I feel that it is a fulfillment of of biblical prophecy to be able to shine a light to the world. And that's being a light unto the nations from Israel. So that's really special. And thank you, all of you from all those nations, for fulfilling that biblical prophecy of allowing yourself to see the light from Israel. And Baruch Hashem, blessed are you. Blessed you got you guys out there. And I bless all of the people who write to me all the time saying they are part of the international Torah community around the world. And I really do continue to bless you. And so does Rav Mike, I'm sure. All right. Now, speaking of dysfunctional families, we have here, we have a Torah portion called Vayeshev, and it is found. Oh, we got Kor says Shalom from, he's watching from the Netherlands. So it's really big. That's really great. We have here we're in the book of Genesis, and in the book of Genesis, we have chapter 37. We're dealing with We dealt with Abraham. We dealt with Isaac, and we're dealing still with Jacob. But this is now Jacob's children. We're dealing with the 12 tribes, and it should be like a eureka moment. Like, yay, 12 tribes! We're ready to rock. Let's go. We're Israel. But sadly, 12 tribes, really from the inception that we meet them, are at each other's throats, and they are fighting one another. And even Joseph is, in the first verses that we meet him, he's already speaking bad about some of his brothers, and later brothers are jealous of him. And this causes strife. Then on top of the strife that is already felt, there's the advent of the first set of dreams. I think that the Joseph story has three sets of two dreams altogether. If you count Pharaoh's dreams, you count the cook and the butler, and you count Joseph's dreams.
Gotcha.
Right? Am I right here? Yeah. So
we jump to the dreams, can I go back to what you said about the brothers?
Yes. Go for it.
I just Jordan. Oh, did you lose him there? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I hear you good.
Okay. Because we're a little choppy in here. We're not entirely overcoming, but when I heard you say there's sort of this ought to be a eureka moment, 12 tribes, we've arrived, but then it sort of leads to conflict and division, and not just conflict and division, but they literally beat their brother up and throw him in the pit. And like you pointed out, it seems like he a little bit deserved it, at least on the face of things, right? Not a simple story, fair, right? But I think it's crucial to remember that the tribes play a critical role in the Israelite mission in the world. Because while we are the people of one God, one Torah, one land, it's one God, one Torah, one land, 12 tribes. Why? Because within that unity is a recognition of the complexity of humanity. And therefore, it's the differences between the tribes which is crucial to maintain. Now, those differences in their raw form mean conflict, because that's just the way it is. I mean, I've got 5 kids and they're all very different, and their differences are sometimes, beautiful and give the plentiful sense of diversity of thought and opinion within our family. But most of the time, they're at each other's throats. But the real strength of a world that can give full expression to the divine will can't do it in unity. Only God can give expression to God in unity. We give expression to God through a united particularity, right? This brother, that brother. That there's a whole process of tikkunim, so the refinements and the fixings that have to happen here. We see the journey. But I think it's important to note that the conflicts are essential, not incidental. They're a crucial part of the process, because it's the distinctions and maintaining distinctions that makes Hebrew universalism unique.
Okay. But does it have to come through selling each other to slavery, or can it be through a nice discourse or a pool game or something like that? Does it have to be like, Are you saying that things had to get flushed out? Things have to get, sometimes even if they're not pretty, you know, like, I mean, I think it's common belief that there's an excessiveness here. There's a mistake here. There's a sin that happens here that has to get rectified later on down the line.
Yeah, but that's consistent with the entire Bible. Remember, the Bible's not presenting some ideal. It's not philosophy. It's not some Greek, drama, which is meant to exemplify ideas. This is real life. And whether it had to be this way or not is a question only God can answer. Humanity answers the question, this is the way it is. Look at our current return today. Well, if we're really the Jews, we're really the chosen people, this is really our land, shouldn't we have just sort of come in and the whole world would have known it and we would have been able to hold our spiritual stature and straighten our backs after 2,000 years of it? Yeah. You know what the reality is? That's not how life works.
Right.
Life works through repair, through hard work, through determination. And it's, by the way, real integrity is displayed by overcoming adversity and repeated failure, not by some like, oh, I know who I am, I know what I need to do, in a smooth
process. Well, that's a great point. I mean, I think that's a really great point. And I think that's a point that I think I'd like to stress that a little bit, what you're saying, because I get a lot of times in conversation with people who are fed up. I see that a lot, of various kinds. By the way, there was, I don't mean to go into this topic, but a lot of the corona, COVID virus, the folks who kind of think that, you know, the government, played one on them and experimented on them and that kind of stuff, and are very disappointed in the world. I had a few friends like that who are just like, they are just like, they've given up on the world and they're completely freaked out. They're freaked out. And it's the smarter, the more, the harder they fall.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I'm just like, maybe you're not wrong about anything, but like your attitude, you've actually become sick in your despondency and disappointment in the world. The rabbit hole that you've gone down has really just suck you down, and you can't come back up. And I've seen that also in right wing people and left wing people and different whatever it is. And I just say to people like what I got from what you said is, read the Joseph story. You could totally just be like, I don't want to deal with this book of horrors, you know, of these infighting. And the point of the book is, no, the story keeps going, and you That's overcome.
It's the point of Joseph's life too.
Right. That's what I'm understanding.
But personally, meaning the point of the book in general, but him personally, there he is when Eshet Potiphara, when like this beautiful seductress who has all kinds of power, could change his life forever, right? Says, come, lie with me, do what Egyptians do. Nobody's going to criticize you unless you be weak and get caught. But, you know, together and all these promises, you know, why not? Here he is. His own brothers beat him up and threw him in the pit. There's an argument to be made that maybe his father kind of knew this was coming and set him up, right? He's gone. Nobody's thinking about him. Nobody's looking for him. Why not? But in the end of the day, he decides, and this is what I meant before about agency, he decides, that's not who I am.
Right.
You know, and in the same way that that your friends who give in to that despair and go down the rabbit hole or on the left or right, I think the reason is because to maintain agency is frightening. There's something very comforting about going down the rabbit hole that this is being done to me and the world is out of control. And when the world's out of control, I can't actually try to take responsibility for controlling it or maybe even, God forbid, myself. And the burden of agency and freedom is lifted.
Yeah. There's a truth in what you're saying. There's a truth in that. And on the flip side, there's also the type of people who are always saying like, wow, only Messiah could fix this. Only Mashiach could fix this business.
It's another abdication of agency.
Right. It's like you know, don't say that. You know, don't say that. I'll just flush out what abdication of agency means. It just means I don't want to take care of it. I can't deal with it. It's too icky. It's too messy. I'm just walking away from it.
Yep.
I myself.
No, Rabbi Shlomo used to say?
What?
He used to say that if you're going to believe in Mashiach, you have to believe in Am Yisrael. Because you believe that Am Yisrael has the ability to bring Mashiach.
Yeah, it's belief
in Mashiach is a belief in Am Yisrael.
Because for me, one of the people that I learned that things can be bettered was an Italian. It wasn't a Jew. It was an Italian mayor of New York City named Rudy Giuliani. And when I lived in New York City and close by, when I saw that town that had like gone Gotham could be brought out of that and turned into this like safe and vibrant place, I was like, I remember I was a kid. I must have been like 14. I was just like, wow. I was just like, no, I wasn't 14. I was 14 when I saw it bad. I guess I was 21 when I saw it, you know, turning good. And I was just like, I'm telling you, Rav Mike, I remember being shocked. And I remember that I was like, wow, I now believe for the first time in the power of politics, in the power of leadership, in the power of, as Rabbi Nachman says, if you believe that things can be, you know, wrecked and destroyed, believe that they can be bettered as well. Like, I did not believe that until I saw it with my own eyes. And I was like, wow. And I always wanted to write a letter to Rudy Giuliani and tell him, you know what, man? It took an Italian for me to teach me about Hanukkah.
I think he's like, having a little bit of a hard time right now. He might appreciate the letter.
Whatever, yeah, and whatever, whoever he is today, and I'm not getting into that. And that's not the issue.
You know, no, it's an important piece in what you're saying is that you're familiar with the broken window theory,
which was sure.
the social theory that they say was driving his behavior. It is the most Jewish attitude you could ever have. It's the belief that small, repeated actions which reflect a commitment to values are the only basis for transformation in the world. You know, sort of like big visionary moves, maybe yes, maybe no, right, but right. Small, consistent actions which are clearly expressive of my core values serve as a platform to change everything.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, Rav Mike, we're coming up to Hanukkah next week. I want you to know so that there's a few holidays that get me inside, like that cause me to like just kind of like tear up and like to feel like these feelings. And Hanukkah is one of them. I light those candles. I'm just like, first thing, Hanukkah is a type of political holiday, but the rabbis acquiesced to the Maccabees, you know, request that their victory would be remembered for generations. And so that, you know, I just like, it's all, if you study about it, if you study about the story of the Maccabees, the battles, it's all known. We know the battles. We know the battles that they fought. We know where, we know what, we know how. It's written out pretty well. It's written out in the Book of Maccabees 1 and 2. It's written in Josephus and in other historical documents from back then. And the power of courage, and I guess the power of the opposite of despondency. I hope that my friends who are suffering from this despondent attitude will look closely at the Hanukkah lights and get inspired to just get back up and do and be part of action and be part of the time that God has given them the allotment to live in.
And I'm going to sharpen that because it's always very important to me to ask the question, my Hanukkah, right? That's what the Gemara asks. Like, what is Hanukkah? It's a unique question. There is no other Jewish holiday. The sages are like, what exactly is this? What do you mean, what is this? Like, either it says so explicitly in the Torah or you're the sages. You tell me, like, what are you asking for? You know, every year, as you mentioned, like yourself, my father, you also had Hanukkah lights in your Shiva house, huh?
Yeah. And yeah. Not only that, my father loved Hanukkah and he had special little porcelain canisters of oil, these little jugs, and we lit them. And it was like a whole thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, we had to light those. We had to light those days after he passed away. Certainly. Yeah.
Like what more powerful expression of the personal experience of light out of darkness could there really be more than Hanukkah candles in a Shiva house? It's just like, yeah, we're in darkness right now, but that doesn't in any way affect our belief in the light. Mm. You know, I may be in darkness. Fine. That's just real. You got to be real. You got to be where they're at. But that doesn't mean you give up on your essential truth. So I give a Shira class every year. My father's member. I've been doing it for almost 20 years. I actually sent you the link there if you want to share it in the banner or something. If people want to come, the Zoom link.
Where did you send it?
It's on Thursday. I put it in there's a chat that you and I have. It's private. I don't know if you ever noticed that. But anyway, it's on Thursday, 1 p.m. EDT or 8 p.m. on Israel time. But my point is that the piece that I would stress to our friends, to everyone on Hanukkah, is what the Rambam says. You know what the Rambam says, what we're celebrating? He says, Chazar Malchut L'Yisrael Yeter Matayim Shana. Right? That Malchut, sovereignty, returned to Israel for more than 200 years. Now, here's the funny thing. If you count that up from the time the Maccabees won in, let's call it 164 before the Common Era, and you get a little bit more, he thinks up to the Korban. So it's literally like 230 years, but whatever. To call that Malchut Yisrael is a stretch.
Mm-hmm.
Herod is an interesting character. You and I have had some brief talks about Herod because of the work you're doing there in Hebron and the important role that he played in, you know, in the Mara. But there's plenty of Rome in there. There's plenty of other things. It's hard to just call it Malchut Yisrael. But the Rambam meant what you just said. No, it's cultural sovereignty. Mm-hmm. It's sovereignty of consciousness. Mm-hmm. It's the recognition that in the end of the day, our achievement as a people comes when the physical world manifests our spiritual sovereignty. But our real sovereign space is in the neshama. It's in the soul, because that's the task that God sent us in the world to perfect through the body, right? We're not some sort of leave the world in order to find your purpose type people. Where, you know, the spirit of the Maccabees can be reduced to, you know, the need for sovereignty over geography in order to fulfill theology. You got to hold the spiritual high ground in order to do your job.
Right, but it could go the other way as well, right? You could turn it into, and this is something I'm always wary of also, which you could spiritualize it totally and take away the embodied control over the land of Israel and push away foreign influences, etc.
But that's why the spirit of the Maccabees is sovereignty over geography.
Right.
Is crucial for theology. I mean, you can't have the cultural sovereignty without. No, yes, in exile you can, and it's an inner state, etc. But you're like a ghost. It's not real full sovereignty. Right. We're meant to act in the world.
Right.
So it's an exciting time. I just think that we live in a time where sovereignty is finally surfacing as what is appearing to more and more people the only logical path ahead. However you conceive it, because I think there's still a diversity.
I was at a committee meeting today in the Knesset, and I'm like, wow, we have formed a complex apparatus. The state apparatus is one, and we're like a New Jersey sized country.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm just like, wow, this is a complex apparatus, this whole thing. And it's got a lot of like, let's call it checks and balances, but moving parts and different things. And it's like,
and the big personalities in there.
Yeah, big personalities, but also there's also already, you know, a lot of divisions of labor, and there's a lot of money involved. The state has a lot of, and there's all kinds of, there was a judge in this committee meeting, and a representative of the police and Knesset members and NGOs. Oh, yeah. And
these are real robust institutions,
all kinds of stuff. Let's just say hi to some of the folks that are out there and are saying hi. First thing from Nepal, Raja Bahai asks that we pray for him. He says he's diabetic. He's having some problems. So please pray for Raja. And we do Raja from Nepal. God bless you. May Hashem give you strength.
That you have strength and healing.
That's right. My good buddy, Steve Eisenberg, says, Shalom, joining late. Greetings and blessings from South Florida.
I hope it's warm down there. Is Fort Lauderdale in South Florida?
It is. It is. It is.
My daughter's there, and I'm praying for her that she should get some sun before she goes off the army in another week and a half when she comes home.
I don't, there's no name. What is it called? The Bubby Belt.
The Bubby Belt. Oh, my goodness. As a guy who grew up in the Rust Belt,
yeah, you know,
the Bubby Belt sounds much more appealing.
The Bubby Belt, but it's really not the Bubby Belt anymore. But now Arif, Asadkhil says all fake.
meaning everything. Like,
he's just like
he's a Buddhist.
Poo poo on
all,
you.
Like this is
no,
all,
no. I don't think he means that. I think he's saying. I don't know for sure what he means, but I think he's just saying you guys are all totally fake. Which is a total. That's like a type of Amalekite type of comment. It's like, forget it. You're all. There is no God. The whole thing is.
But unfortunately, as we know that, you know, this substitutes for discourse today. I had this experience this morning. I posted a Ben Shapiro article that I didn't necessarily agree with all of it, but I think, like as is usual, he's just got that sort of machine-like mind that can just lay out
you know, like the whole picture, right? So it's like, wow, that's worth reading. And I saw the comments that I got back. I'd say 90% of the people didn't ever actually read the article.
Right.
They just like, no, he's a bad person. He's a bad person. Yeah. I can't believe you platform him. It's like,
oh, and let's just say that's the Ben Shapiro article talking to Orthodox Jews and asking them about their acceptance of the LGBT plus Q plus. So the whole gay rights issue.
The only, you know where the only place he missed in that article is he didn't connect it to Hanukkah. He didn't. It was a miss that he didn't connect it to Hanukkah.
Yeah, no,
it was a Hanukkah article par excellence.
Right, absolutely. And you know what? Maybe that's worth tweeting like that. But I want to say, like,
you do it. People listen to you. I ain't gonna get any traction out of it.
I by the way, sometimes I thought to myself, I thought to myself, wow, Western society is probably gonna go right down like Roman society. Basically, there are some theories that Roman society went down. Right, but specifically, the Roman society went down because of their, you know, homosexuality, super acceptance, and all that kind of stuff. And there's some theories that that's what caused, or the sexual, let's call it this way, their sexual licentiousness.
Yeah, I was going to say it's important to make a distinction because the issue there is not, you know, man loves man per se.
Right.
The issue there goes back to the family that we spoke about, which is that when sexual connection is kept within the context of procreation. Excuse me if I sound biblical for a moment, right? The demands on character, the recognition of consequences and responsibility for decisions, the long-term commitments which serve as vessels for the pleasure and the complexity that we all experience when it comes to just sort of like physical sexuality are crucial vessels, right? And I'm not even going to get into judging other people, which Ben didn't hesitate to do, and I appreciate the fact that he went all the way with his logic, right? Personally, I'm not even going to get into judging other people. My challenge is that it's fairly clear how this Torah presents these things. And if a person wants to be merciful and try to reframe the Torah for an individual in order to be able to conceive of themselves as right with God, I support that. But to actively undermine one of the fundamental stances of the Torah, which is that your core to God,
your core what? I missed a word there.
I jumped. I said that your core identity is your relationship to God, mm-hmm. and not your relationship to sexual desire.
Right.
That's just a mistake.
That's such a powerful phrase. What you just said. That your core identity is your relationship to God, not your sexual desire.
Which is in no way to denigrate sexual desire or to underappreciate the challenges and the complexity and the power. But the Torah is pointing out to you, yes. And I think the Torah is very kind of pragmatic and gritty about that, you know, in certain ways. And also the sages certainly knew, like you're pointing out, the sages weren't like ignoramuses of this question. Like you're pointing out, they developed in the Greco-Roman world. This was nothing new to them.
Right.
Yeah,
anyway, that's right. And these things are not new. These things are not new. You're right. The Greco-Roman, we are facing the Greco-Roman challenge. I just wanted to finish that thought that I had for you before, which is similar to what you're saying. But like, I was like, there was an announcement by President Biden and stuff this week. And I thought to myself, okay, well, this will lead to the inevitable end of Western, the supremacy of Western civilization, which I do not count Israel as a full member of. I count it as a partial member.
Well, we need to create some space there,
right? Like I think there is natural space there.
There's natural space, but since the beginning of the state, we've been trying to close that gap and really position.
Yeah,
ourselves
but it depends who we are. You know what I mean? Who's we? You know what I mean? Like
don't start that Jewish thing with me.
No, because like I'll tell you why. Because like I come from a Russian background, and you could see the Russia of today is very much like we are not part of Western civilization. These guys, they're going down. Not that you should like Putin, but I'm just saying like there's a part of me that's like, I'm not that in the first place. And then this country, I think of it as a much more Sephardic country. And they're not like all day long talking about being part of Western civilization. They're like, they're not talking about that. You know, and so I think that there's plenty of ways of like, from a very like natural, not non-massaged self-identity, which is like not so Western. So from the get-go, without even thinking it very deeply, there are some, you know, Hasbara folks that talk about us being Western and stuff like that. But And we are also Mediterranean basin, which is many things, which is North Africa, which is Italy, which is Greece, which is France, which is, you know, it has a lot of different flavors. And I wouldn't just like, you know, stick us into Western Civ exactly. We've been crossroads of civilizations always, and we are our own civilization, although inspired by many different peoples. Right.
Thank you for ending on that. That's what we are.
We are our own civilization. We have our own civilizational info, which fills our whole life. There's tons of it.
Numerically, we may not compete with the sort of classic grand civilizations, but culturally, and certainly in our influence on human history, I will take second to none.
Right. So then I was thinking, well, there she goes. There goes that ship. It's springing a leak and it's going down. And then I must say something to you, which is also to bring in something very, very modern. There's a guy out there. There's always a guy out there that I think to myself, well, Western Civ still has a chance to pull it out. And it's, the new boss of Twitter. what's his face?
Elon Musk
is like, he's like, you know, I'm just like, wow, this guy is fighting for classical liberal values of freedom of speech, which is a cornerstone of Western Civ, and also, you know, pushing back on wokeness, etc. So there's still a chance. That's what I thought to myself. Still a chance for them as well. Okay. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but there's something in my heart which said to me, like, there's still heroes that
you're breaking up badly.
Oh, sorry about that. I'm just saying there's still heroes that are coming out of those quarters.
Yeah. Listen, you know, it's important to remember that just because I glibly said that all empires have their day doesn't mean that they disappear necessarily. I think of the two different models as the Roman and the British, meaning Rome imploded. It was gone, right? It was like shocking, in fact, how quickly the Germanic tribes were able to dismantle the Roman Empire.
That's after a thousand years of rule, right?
Yeah, no, fair. I mean, yeah. they had a good ride. I'm not disparaging that. But Great Britain retreated but maintained itself as a nation,
right?
You know, and it could be that the sort of people like Elon Musk, what they're trying to reach for are the core values of the American nation. In order that whatever lies ahead, there will be a base for holding the nation together if the sort of global empire influence phase indeed passes.
Right. Right. You know, you just reminded me that I remember that just around September 11th, soon after that horrible, jihadist fundamentalist Islam attack on America happened, I remember that soon afterwards, if I recall correctly, but at the time, I was amazed that the Harry Potter books came out, and I thought to myself, "Wow! Like the deep part of like England, and that whole Arthurian, like Arthur type, legends."
And Tolkien came out of there,
right? Right, like and it's like oh, you like you struck us, we strike you back with our legends and with our consciousness, and there's this like fight between East and West. Anyway, let me get to just a few other people here. Khalid Jang Jang writes, "Elohim bless Pakistan." Well, I got nothing against that, Khalid. Absolutely, Elohim may God may Hashem. May Hashem bless and Pakistan as well. Our old friend, Mark Pickles, our good friend and our old friend, says perhaps the sovereignty of the 70 nations depends on the all-centering sovereignty of Israel. The folks today who want diversity and inclusion seem to me not to want diversity at all. They want a borderless world. But as I see it, the best out of every nation could only come out of that nation. That's an interesting dichotomy that Mark puts out, that the people want diversity, actually want a kind of homogeneity.
He's absolutely correct. The diversity language is a hypocritical perspective because it has the illusion that the universal involves reducing everyone to a sort of an atomistic individual. Right. This is an old argument between Christianity and Judaism in terms of the abstraction and disembodiment
right? I don't want to go all the way into it, but I think Mark is entirely correct. And this is certainly the Jewish vision of a unified world. It's a unified world in which I call it the ecosystem model, where I don't need the world to be Jews. I need the world to be the righteous nations. And it's through the diversity of the nations that the true richest of humanity will be experienced. There needs to be some element that allows us to move past, like we started with, the conflict that so quickly arises from difference, like amongst the brothers, and move into the tikkun, that sort of fixing and healing and the perfection that allows difference to really become a thriving ecosystem model, right? And that's our dream. And yes, I agree that I do believe that is the role that Am Yisrael is meant to play in the world, because we have an ability to connect with everyone as they are, and yet an obligation to stay as ourselves.
Andrew says, blessings from Canton, Texas. And he says, Hallelujah, Beteka Shofar, which means
bless God. Pretty chazak. That's a pretty chazak blessing. Beteka Shofar. Like that. It's like not just a Hallelujah. It's like with a ram's horn. Throw it in. Oh, sorry.
Let's see. Now, Dawn writes, in the U.S., we get our Hanukkah education from Adam Sandler. You know,
that is actually the most unique Hanukkah spelling I've ever seen. I just wanted to know. Right. That, with all the spellings I've ever seen,
that's right. She spelled it Honika, Hanukkah. We usually
which is phonetically correct.
Yeah, more or less. It's not Honika, it's Chanukah.
But that's if you lack the chet, the Hanukkah, it's not unfair. It's not unfair.
All right, it's fair. In any case, you know, Adam Sandler, I want to tell you. I always thought
that's a big award.
What's that?
He just got some big award, the Mark Twain Award. I just saw this.
Oh, I don't know anything about that, but I do want to say that original Hanukkah song did give people a Jewish boost for many years, and because he really said we are. But what is that song saying? We are different. We are unique. We have our own thing. And
don't lump us into Christmas.
Right. That was a strong.
You know, I think Adam Sandler is like, he's on the team. He's himself. He does his own thing and whatever. But like, the guy is clearly knows who he is.
Well, we could talk more about that. I think that it might be that he didn't choose a lifestyle that perpetuates the Jewish peoplehood per se, which is too bad.
Okay.
But he definitely helped a lot of people feel Jewish, and he gets something for that. That's for sure. My good friend Dan Masri says that I may have said 20th of Cheshvan when I meant 20th of Kislev. So thank you very much for fixing that up. And Lou says, our faithful producer says, I love Elon Musk and approve of freedom of speech on Twitter, but he and Twitter have to be careful not to allow terrorists and hate speech to dominate the site. Indeed. Indeed.
It's a challenge. It's definitely a challenge. No question.
Let's just do one last little bit here. Let's talk about dreams. God has different forms of connecting to mankind and connecting to the people of Israel in the Torah. You know, I said that there was, like, in the Joseph story, there's three sets of dreams, but in truth, one could take it back also all the way to the beginning of the Yaakov story, where he also has two dreams. He has a dream of the ladder, and then he has a dream of God telling him how to actually be successful outside of the exile, and also calling him back to the land of Israel. So there's those dreams. Then there's the two Joseph's dreams in this week's Torah portion, which is about the stars bowing down to him, stars and the moon and the sun, and then the wheat stalks, sheaves, wheat bundles, sheaves bowing down to him. And then finally, the dream of the butler and the baker.
Baker.
And I always say that the reason that the baker loses his head while the butler gets back is because you see that you need to drink more liquid and stay away from carbs. And that's just the Torah signaling that to you. Okay, that's a little dark humor there. Yeah. So tell me about dreams, Rav Mike Foyer. Why dreams? Why connect through dreams? Dreams, so it's kind of involuntary dreams. It's kind of like unclear. It's always going to be, it's always, P.S. by the way, last night I had like a nightmare, like it's like at like 5:30 in the morning, right before I woke up.
Like a nightmare.
Well, it was one of these, I happen to know that it was motivated by the very day that I was facing, because I was in my dream, I was in the Knesset on the way to help with the speech. And then I was lost and I couldn't find my way to the room. And then I looked down and my tie was mistied and I had a big stain of liquid from my pants to my shirt.
And classic.
And then I heard my name being called and Yishai Fleischer.
Yishai, you're on. Yishai, you're on.
I couldn't even find where to go in my dream. And then luckily I was like, wait a minute. This is just a dream. I'm out.
This is just an anxiety nightmare. Right.
Exactly.
That's a classic anxiety nightmare, huh? So why dreams? I think you went to exactly where I wanted to start, which is Yaakov's dream of the ladder. I think it's very important to understand that Yaakov's dream of the ladder is not just another incident in his life. It's not just another incident in the Jewish story. And it's not just another incident in human consciousness. It is an essential archetype. Right. It is the fact that the commitment of the children of Israel, who are his descendants, is the commitment to the fact that there's always something which connects heaven and earth. And our task as individuals and as a people and really as humanity is not just to find, but to give expression to that connection. Now, here's the trick. I spoke about agency before, and I am a deep believer in enhancing agency and commitment to agency and belief in agency. But what? Agency sometimes stands in direct. Ooh, did I lose you?
Yeah, you said agency stands in direct
opposition to emunah,
To faith,
to faithfulness to God, to ability to let go and let God. And so, therefore, it's very important to understand every dream starts the same way. You know how what does every dream share in common?
And what does every dream share in common?
It's a trick question. Every single one, without fail.
You're
in every
asleep.
Culture, every person, you fall asleep.
Right.
Which means that you do the most basic letting go.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is possible. And that's what opens the door for you to be a vessel that connects heaven and earth.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Right? By the way, to connect back to our story, that's why Yosef is the one who's able to transform his dreams into a reality that actually sets the stage for redemption, right? He understands his own dreams. He understands the dreams of the butler and the baker. He understands the dreams of Paro. Why? Because what is it when Paro says, I think it's in next week's Parsha, but whatever. When Paro pulls him out and he wants the sort of explanation of his own dream, he says, I heard you can interpret dreams. What does Joseph say?
Dreams are unto God. Dream interpretations
are
God's.
Till I die.
Right. Oh, that's right.
He says, it was not me.
Without you.
It's not me.
Without you, God will answer you in peace.
But then he proceeds to give quite an actually smart answer, and he's savvy even politically. And like, but it begins. He takes his agency, but it begins in till I die. In the same way, every dream begins with saying, but think about Yaakov, by the way. Yaakov's running away from his mother convinced him to trick his father. His brother wants to kill him. And he's like, well, chuck it. I'm just going to sleep. Now, part of that is definitely a stress response. We all know that one. It's like, I'm done. Right? But that's an honest statement also. But it's also deeper. He's the first person that the Torah tells us goes to sleep. You know that?
Well, I think Adam goes to sleep.
No, Tardema is not sleep.
Right, Tardema is
Tardema also happens to Abraham. It's anesthesia, right? It's
anesthesia.
God knocks him out.
Right.
God knocks out Adam. God knocks out Abraham.
Right.
Yaakov goes to sleep. It's a decision. Yeah. He could have stayed up all night by the fire, obsessing about what happened and going over in his mind how he listened to his mother and his father's going to hate him and his brother's going to kill him. And sound familiar to you?
Right.
No, he's like, you know what? I'm going to bed. And that opens up a horizon for him to connect heaven and earth, that paves the way for all the dreams that we see in our parsha.
Very good.
Frankly, for the type of miracles that we see throughout history.
Very good. Okay, I love it. That's a great point. And I actually used that point today, by the way. I was at the Knesset. Things were going very late. Itamar Ben-Gvir is not showing up. And I had like pressure from three or four different points. And I was just like,
what? I'm like feeling the stress just thinking about it.
Oh my gosh. Like, is he coming? Was it coming? What's the deal? Was the deal? I'm like, right, this, that. And he's sitting in a different part of the building with a huge amount of people smashing down his head, a million pressures. And then at some point I was just like, I'm just going to let go. Like, I'm doing my best. And okay,
and then like
I can't control it.
What are you gonna do?
Right, and whatever. So everybody could just calm down, and the whole thing is just it's fine. And the minute I let go, everything worked out just fine. And it was very important. It's very important to know how to let go. So I really like that. It's a great piece of advice. A great piece of advice. Let's just give a few people just a last chance to say something. Our own Applebaum says the ladder symbolizes the spiritual level of Bnei Israel in terms of how close or far they are to God. So that's great. And for then
sure there's up and down there.
One of our sponsors, Chaim Davids of prohibitionpickle.co.il, says, howdy, rabbis. And I say, howdy right back. And I want to tell you
right back to you, my friend.
That's right. And if you actually go to prohibitionpickle.co.il and type in coupon code Yishai, you will get percentage points off of any order that you make within continental Israel. Of delicious,
including if you want to send gifts of herring to Yishai or myself.
That's right. Gifts of Shabbos prep. It's actually a lot of fun. It's special.
I promise that I will have a deep Shabbos oneg on your behalf.
Will you wait? Slicha, I sneezed. Will you send? See, but you got to give something back, Rav Mike. If you get a prohibition pickle. Wait.
You mean Koyser Alevim Zelazet? If I'm having a good time, so are you. So what am I?
No, that's not good enough. Will you be sending?
It was clever though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was clever. But will you be sending a blessing? Because I think that that's worth it.
I think a person wants
a special blessing.
Not only will I daven for you at the Kiddush, I will send you a blessing. I would take a picture, but it's Shabbos Kiddush, so I can't.
That's right. But maybe a picture right before Shabbos. In any case, very special stuff. And by the way, another friend and sponsor of the show, which is Jay Brick, my friend Yitz at jbrick.com, which is Jewish Lego. He is in Israel constructing the world's largest Lego menorah at the Lego store in Tel Aviv. And that's awesome. That is really happening right now. That's awesome. That's really cool. So that's jbrick.com. So some really great folks that are part of the show. Rav Mike Foyer, I want to thank you for being part of the show. You also have your spiritual counseling for people who need it, and that's found at RavMike.com or RavMike.co. What are we at? No, RavMike.com and TheJewishStory.co. RavMike.com, am I right?
JewishStory.co. That is correct. And if folks want to join that share, you can send me an email, RavMikeFoyer.com. I'm happy to share with you the link for Thursday night. You want a little Hanukkah inspiration.
Wunderbar. And you will be able to get some spiritual, what do we call those? Hanukkah donuts, sufganiyot. You can get some serious, you know how those little hearts, you know, when you like something, there's like these little hearts that pop up on the screen. Instead, there's little sufganiyot right now. Sufganiyot and amazing Hanukkah light is coming from Israel. Rav Mike Foyer, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program today. And I want to thank everybody out there. And wish you guys a Shabbat Shalom and a happy Hanukkah and a lot of strength and a lot of fearlessness and a lot of love. I want to thank Lou for being on the show and helping us produce it. Lou, Ben Bresky, Chevet Seidman, Moshe Herman, and Tabitha for getting the show out to the world. And again, Amen. Thanks to you and God bless you.
All right. It's great to be back and blessings to everybody.
All right. Shalom. God bless you, folks. Steve Eisenberg says, Shabbat Shalom Lekulam. That means good Sabbath to everybody from Israel. I know it's only Wednesday night, but we're getting ready for Shabbat. We're getting ready for the Holiday of Lights. Yeah, it's totally okay. God bless you, folks. Thanks again, and Shalom. All right, folks. I hope you enjoyed the Rav Mike Foyer segment of the Yishai Fleisher Show. I know it's another long show, and God bless you. I want to wish you a happy Hanukkah. Lots of light, lots of presents, lots of energy, lots of Beit HaMikdash, lots of Jewish power, Jewish strength, Jewish return to Jewish pride and culture, and of course service of Hashem, which is number one, and the love between us, one another as a people, and of course lovers of Israel throughout the world who are part of the story. Thank you so much to the lovers of Israel. You are indeed part of the story, and I feel that and I see that all the time.
So we are sending you blessings from the land of blessings. Stay connected in the various ways. Join me on social media, especially on Twitter, where I have a lot of fun, and on Facebook. Of course, you can help make the show be widely dispersed and free of charge, and by getting it out there yourself, by telling family members about it, by rating it highly. Friends and family, of course, are welcome, and by going to buymeacoffee.com/Yishai and going to yishaifleischer.com/donate, which are ways to keep the show floating and our projects moving forward. We have so much to do when we're building the land of Israel. That's it. Thank you, Hashem, for the opportunity to speak with my friends and to push out the light of Israel during this Hanukkah season. God bless you. Stay strong, stay connected, stay tuned, and shalom.